I'm Cher Barker. I'm an alcoholic. Whew. I almost had to pee again, but I'll be all right. It's great to be here. Thank you, Jerry, for picking me up, and Joe and Gary and Don, and there's so many people here that I have seen again and watched over the years grow up in Alcoholics Anonymous as they have watched me grow up in Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, Marcel and Diane, you're close to my heart, and there's a lot of other people here, too, very much, very close to my heart. And the other speakers have been great. I've enjoyed myself, and Ed, I watched him come in and go out, and he's back, and it's great. You know, he's really, there's a sense of humility that I love seeing in alcoholics when I know they're getting it. And Stephanie, I know you're just going to rock the house tomorrow. And thank you, Jimmy, for his angst. I love that angst. I was Catholic, not Jewish, but I think we all had a lot of guilt. And, you know, I just kind of get off on that guilt still. I don't know what it is. But who hung this sign, by the way? It's a little... I think one of those significant others that stood up there, you know. And I think they used the duct tape because, you know, they use it for other things before the spouses got sober. And it's a little crooked because I'm an alcoholic and I want to straighten it. You could tell me that I would blow up the button behind that. If I move it at all, that the button is there and the powder will go and the house will blow up. And I'll sit there and look at that crooked picture for maybe a day, and then I got to move it. Doesn't matter. I got to move it. Blow up or not blow up, the picture's going to get straight. And that's the kind of alcoholic I am. But it's great to be here. I think Foster City is safe tonight. and, you know, I think about how lucky we are to, first of all, live in a time... the time and space where there's Alcoholics Anonymous practically everywhere. That we, you know, I may never hit the lotto, but I have really beat the odds, as you have, sitting in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, hearing the solution, and finding your people. I mean, that was one of the first things that, growing up in Iowa, which was my first resentment, I knew that they had left me here by mistake. And I would sit in those soybean fields in the middle of the summer as a little girl looking for the mothership. I knew they had left me off. And I come from a non-alcoholic family, and my family, still to this day, I'm waiting for somebody to fall out of the closet. And there, I thought I had one, a cousin, but the military straightened him out. You know, it didn't mess him up. It straightened him out. So I'm it. And when I come home, the party still happens. I mean, the coffee pot's on, AA is there. My mother just likes the class of friends I have a lot more these days. But there's always excitement around an alcoholic. I don't know what it is. My type of alcoholic, I'm the kind that likes to look for love in all the right and wrong places. It doesn't matter. I am on the move. I'm looking for truth. It's got to be, you know, in the next state or tonight I'm going to Dancemore Ballroom. Oh, you know, I'm 14 years old and my parents had dropped me off at Swisher at Dancemore Ballroom because it was a live band and I like to dance, and I couldn't wait till the boys from Iowa City, one of them had asked me to dance. And, you know, the Righteous Brothers and V-neck sweaters and English leather and Jade East, and, you know, snuggle on up close there. And but I was always sniffing for the bourbon. I could always find the boy from Iowa City who had the bourbon. And that's what I just was. There's something about if I ever, you know, I think it was 2 years ago, I think I was in a market and I smelled bourbon and English leather and somebody at the same time, and my knees got weak. I don't know about you, but I like those crowded Monday morning elevators where it's coming out of the pores and, you know, you don't know who it is, but somebody had a good weekend. But I like that stale kind of smell, you know, the kind that draws fruit flies, you know. There's something just so attractive still to me about that. And, you know, I would get close to them, and then we'd go out, and you know, we'd go out, we have some bourbon, and we'd come back in and dance, and my parents would pick me up about 3 hours later, and I'd just lay in the back seat and pass out and go home, and they just thought I was tired from dancing. But I was a good alcoholic. I could find it anywhere, anytime. It didn't matter if it was state-controlled liquor store as Iowa was growing up, or my dad had a business. I was drinking his grain alcohol. I was drinking his apricot, blackberry brandy, things that didn't move. I was watering down vodka, and nobody taught me how. I just stuck to water. I loved my alcohol. It filled me up from the tip of my head to the tip of my toes, and it was spiritual. And I was a seeker, and I found something that was going to take the driver's seat for a long time. And, you know, the beauty of it is that we come from many places. We come from different backgrounds and different upbringings, and we have different views, and we have different hopes and dreams and different judgments. I mean, we're different, but when we sit in the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, when I hear Chapter 5, I take a deep breath and sink a little deeper in my seat because I know I'm one of the lucky ones, and we are one of the lucky ones. And I know there's a card up here, like, well, it's not a court card, but it's a signed card, so there's some people that are new here, and they're not here by choice. And that's okay. The gift has been given. You're sitting in the room. And over the years, I've seen many, many people leave the gift and walk out. And if the gift has been given, grab hold of it. Stay long enough to find out what your gift is to give back, because each one of us have something special, unique, important to give back, not just to Alcoholics Anonymous, but to the world. And if you're sitting in the room and you're bored, I was listening to some in the H&I panel, and if you're sitting in the room and you're bored, you're probably boring. You know, you're probably at that stage. You just get going, get moving. There's a lot to do. There's a lot to do. There's a lot of alcoholics that will die drunk or locked up and never hear the music of Chapter 5 read in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous where you are my people. We are the lucky ones, and that's a precious gift that's been given. You know, I started drinking in the 60s, and, you know, it wasn't just say no, it was just say thanks. And, you know, and I like to be up and going and not miss truth if it was going to happen, so I am one of those alcoholics. I didn't hang around too many with people that were face down going, let's party. You know, I had to keep moving. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I found a piece of truth here. A speaker named Norm Alpha used to tell me why the grass was greener. It's because the other guy took care of his lawn. It was so okay. And then, you know, being a good old-timer, it seems to pick, he picked me out in the room, and he said, and if you're new, we know what you're made of, so we're going to take that fertilizer, and we're going to make a really good lawn. So hang out. And that's what I loved about the old-timers when I got sober and today. You know, they don't give you truth without a solution. Thank God. Because truth was painful. Painful when I was drinking. Painful at the end of my drinking. Painful when I got sober. Truth was painful. My life was painful. I alcohol worked for me for a long time. I could have been anything I wanted to be growing up. I had the support. I had the love. I had the wherewithal. I had it all going. And I didn't look at the president's plane. I was in the White House when I was a teenager. I won a contest as the young citizen of America. Yeah, all right. Now, who started that laughter over there? I know. And I met the boys from Virginia, so I was a little tipsy when I met Lucy Bird and Linda Bird. And I had to close one eye as I went through the reception line with my white gloves on. I remember that. And a few years ago, I found the diary I had kept because I had to keep a diary because I had to talk to the Rotary Club or all these places when I got back, the 4-H Club or somebody, about my experience. And in that journal, I had written about being careful about my drinking. I was 16 years old, and I was worried about it. But I didn't tell anyone. I thought that You know, I thought drinking did for Jeanette Andrews, who was sitting next to me the first night I went out with the boys and sat on a 57 Chevy on a country road and watched my little trainer bra grow, you know, because I, Canadian Club did it, you know. I thought it did it for her, too, but, you know, it didn't, you know. She was just 38D, always wearing sweaters tucked into her shorts, you know. It's just like, she didn't need alcohol for any of that, but, I thought alcohol, when I first started drinking, had that effect for everybody. It filled me up. It allowed me to drive a car and to dance with the football players and tell jokes and win chug-a-lug contests and black out and pass out and come to and can't wait to do it again. I couldn't wait to do it again. I'm one of those people that a couple weeks ago, Casey and I were flying somewhere very cold, like North Dakota, saying yes to AA, sure, I'll come to North Dakota in January. Absolutely, you know. It's not my job to judge. I just say yes if it's open. But the flaps of the plane froze, and so they wouldn't go down. So we're like, you know, pilot comes on after he makes about three loops around the city, and we're going, okay, something's up. And, you know, Casey and I are looking at each other like, well, is this it, you know? And the pilot says, well, the flaps won't go down, so we're going to come in hot, and don't worry about the emergency vehicles. It's just, you know. And so, you know, people are starting to kind of sob, and, you know, and we, you know, we're so alcoholic. Where's the pillows? We're putting pillows all around us, and, yeah. I'm not dying in North Dakota in January. Not doing it. So we come in hot, and it was all fine. Everybody claps and all that, you know. And he and I both looked at each other and went, let's do it again. He's 22 years sober. I'm 29 and a half years sober. Let's do it again. I mean, that's what I'm made of. So when I have three other siblings that are, God, they're good. They're good. And I'm the one that cuts my wrist and calls my dad and writes him a letter, and, you know, because I was confused, because I got my heart broken, because I couldn't cry about the feelings, because I got drunk at the feelings, because I'm in college and I'm not feeling like I have anybody or anybody to follow. I don't have a mentor. I don't, you know, and they were all there. But anytime somebody would come try to help me, I'd back them off. And my dad and the priest came down to try to help me, and, you know, that's my family. You know, the priest and I got drunk. It wasn't a good night. And my father was speechless, the only time I've ever seen him that way. And, you know, they were a little worried about me. I would wake them up in the middle of the night and tell them, we're going to have a talk now. You want me to communicate? I drive from the university to my parents out 3 miles outside of the country of this small town in Iowa, and I would wake them up when the bars would close. And we got to have a talk. So they would get up, and we'd sit at the kitchen table, and I've got my new best friend with me whose eyes are spinning. And I tell them, you know, okay, what, you know? And I said, okay, we're not going to have Mom, Dad anymore. You're going to be Marge and Frank. And I'm not Sharon, because that's a corny country name. I am going to be Cher. And not like Sonny and Cher. Cher, like Cher and Cher, like S-H-A-R-E. And my dad looked at what I was sharing with, and he set his jaw and went to bed, and my mother, I was just, oh, Sharon, and went to bed. And it was like, what? You want me to talk to you? You want to know about me and my life? I'm trying to share with you here, you know? And they don't understand, so I have to get mad, go back to the university, and take some more things so I wouldn't miss truth in case it would hit at 5 in the morning. And that's just the way it was. I was defiant and angry, and I would hitchhike to Washington, D.C. every time they have a march just so I could be pissed off, you know. They weren't letting me in anymore, you know. They went, oh, that's that young citizen of America. Now, you know, I was waving, you know. But I was angry. I was angry at the world. I was becoming the victim. And alcohol just fueled that anger. I couldn't look at my dad anymore. We had had these huge blowouts, these emotional, painful times. We couldn't sit down at the breakfast table together. If he was walking down the hall, I would wait for him because, God forbid, our shoulders would rub and we'd have to catch eyes. Because I was Daddy's little girl, and it was over. I had broken his heart. I had let him come close a number of times, and then I had pushed him back with my anger and stark, raving, mad truth. And I wasn't pretty about it. And, you know, they say when an alcoholic takes a drink, 10 people are immediately affected, and I bet it's a lot more. So I always, to this moment, last breath I just took, next breath I take, being sober is not about me. Being sober, I have learned, is it's not about just me. I am not in that selfish, self-centered, little, tiny, alcoholic world anymore. Our sobriety touches amazing people far, far away. We don't even know how we're linked up. And my job is to be a strong link in the chain. So if you're new in the room, it's not about you anymore. And you probably don't understand that, but that's okay. That my mother sleeps at night because of Alcoholics Anonymous, I am overpaid. That my mother sleeps at night, thank you. Just for that alone. So I had to start taking geographics, which is what I did, and I ended up in New York. I don't know if the bartender there would have said, you know, if you act like this, you're not going to paint another picture for 35 years, because I was artistic and musical, and I went back to college and couldn't paint a picture. I couldn't stand myself. I was loaded at Joe's place and going to try to paint and laying and passing out on canvases with paint on me, and of course I didn't do well. And I was dead inside. There was no more that creative light in me anymore. It had been drunk up. The bartender had asked for it one night, and I paid with it, because that's what alcoholism does. It asks for pieces of your soul as you go down the path of alcoholism. And I had another blowout with my father, and I ended up in Colorado. And I don't know if the bartender at the Mountain Man Bar asked me, but I paid. I paid with my dignity, the last of my dignity. Did something I thought I would never do. Paid with my dignity. And I came to California for the first time with Bob Dylan. I think it was Bob. I didn't ask for his license, but, yeah. It was the summer he was missing. I ended up at a commune where I was 20 years old, and all I really wanted to do was to drink. And these people, all they wanted to do was smoke weed. And we didn't get along because they didn't have a lot of money, and there was that big weed drought at that time, and they were kind of hinky all the time and not happy. And I drank their bong wine because it's all we had one night. And a whole room full of bong wine drinkers. You all know what it tastes like. Yeah. It's potent. Potent stuff. And they got mad and asked me to leave, and so I ended up at in Laguna Beach, and I worked for a guy who painted little pictures really fast, and he never slept either. And I slept on his couch, and he bought me wine every day, and that's all I wanted. And I thought, you know, I'm free. I got this book in my backpack called Be Here Now by Baba Ram Dass. I just danced with the Krishnas last week up there at the Bank of America building in Westwood. Oh, I got their rhythm, got their song, got some books, wouldn't go with them because they wanted me forever. You know, anytime anybody wanted eternity or something, I went, no, no, no. I do right now. I live a day at a time, and that's it. So I'd always run away from the people that seemed to have something that was, had a light to it, because I was dark. I had a hole in my psyche. I had a brown aura. I mean, they always spotted me in the room, and they always went for me. And but I never joined because I didn't know how to have a commitment. I wanted my freedom. So I would drink my wine, and he would paint these little pictures behind a curtain very fast, and I would sell them because I was mellow, and people would talk to me and couldn't talk to him. And then I stuck my thumb out and went back to Colorado just one day with the new dog they gave me, and the entire baby went back near Aspen, Colorado. And somebody was living in my cabin, and I knocked on the door, and I was kind of surprised. They'd only been gone a couple months. And I said, you know, I used to live here, and there's some box of some photographs I'd like back. And the guy went, sure, come on in there. Take your photographs. And he was standing in one of my favorite dashikis with my favorite coffee mug, cooking with my utensils, sleeping on my sheets. And I couldn't ask for anything back. And I thought, what's wrong with you? Just turn around and ask him for your stuff back. And I couldn't. I had to go to the Mountain Man Bar and drink and slobber and get back on the road and end up back at home at 21 years old with Mom and Dad. And my mother said I could stay there as long as I didn't take any drugs in that house and I stayed out of my father's way. And I did. I stayed out of my dad's way because he and I didn't lock eyes anymore. We didn't ride in the same car anymore, going to grandma's house or anything. At Thanksgiving, they sat me with the children at a card table in the other room. I didn't know if I was going to throw the turkey, sob on the turkey, or how I was going, if I was going to pontificate or, you know, behave. They just didn't know. And I remember sitting outside of my grandmother's big front window looking at everybody in there after the meal, cleaning up, and the men were smoking the cigars, and I'm sitting in the snow, and I'm a little high and a little tipsy, and I'm looking at them, and I thought, you know, I don't belong to them anymore either. You know, so I gave up. I gave up being a member of that family. And it's easier to go when you have less ties of your heart. Just harden it up, you know. Let's just take a match and sear the end of it so we don't have to have that heartstring out there anymore. Let's just toughen it up. Let's just keep on going because they don't understand. They don't understand. And that was the 21-year-old with, I had a gallbladder that wasn't working. I had pancreatitis. I was sick. And nobody knew alcoholism. Nobody knew alcoholism. And I ended up at an organic farm in northern Wisconsin in the middle of winter. And I ran into a bunch of these organic people who, you know, if they smoked, is all that organic stuff. And they took away my cigarettes, and they took away my alcohol. And we didn't have, like, a TV. We had a phonograph. They played banjos. One night, in a moment of weakness, I learned to play the spoons. But they would sip this little organic dandelion wine, and they would just behave. Well, and I remember one night I was rocking in that rocking chair reading Mother Earth News. And this guy's over there with that five-string banjo with a Pete Seeger, How to Play the Banjo by Pete Seeger on the phonograph. And he's missing that fifth string. And the snow's getting heavy outside. Cat's tail's flicking around. The dog's looking at me like, what are you going to do? I flew out of that chair and got in the station wagon with the big sun painted on the hood and the bald tires, and I went to Connersville, which was a general store, and I put all my quarters down on the bar, and I got two big cheap gallons of wine. And I brought them home, and I felt better putting it on the table. And they all went to bed because they're organic, and they have to get up and shovel the organic stuff that the organic sheep left, you know? And I'm drinking, and I'm feeling good, you know. The Pete Seeger's across the room, the Stones are on, the cat, the dog, and me, and the wine. And it seemed like they all got up at once. I don't know if it was 4 a.m. or 3 a.m. I must have been having too much fun. And they all seemed to, like, Kilroy peek around the corner. And I remember this. I remember thinking, oh, get out of here. Alcohol is more fun than you. Go away. Get out of my life. And you know what they did? They did. But they gave me that look. I remember that look, seeing it. I don't know what kind of look it is. It's not really the Al-Anon look, because they're smarter than we are. You know, they're not doing it. They're sober. They're watching us. You know, they're going, what are you doing to yourself? And I take that look like it's a judgment. Like, what is wrong with you? Why do you have to act like that? Why can't you shape up? You used to be somebody. You could have been something. You know, you're a leech. You're a sick person. And my comeback, alcohol is more fun than you. And eventually they left, which was fine. And I had a half acre of some crop that I weeded that summer and drank my wine. A fruit fly just flew up here. Really, it wasn't a flashback. It was a fruit fly. Okay. Good. Anyway, I harvested that stuff, and I went into town to sell it, this big deal, so I could get out of town, and I forgot it. I left it back on the farm, and so I joined the carnival because it was in town. And, you know, if you think back over your life, maybe your best thinking got you here, one of my sponsors said to me, and it was great. It was Matt Armstrong's shows. I ran a shooting gallery. I packed up as much of my crop as I could, some clothing, told the new dog to get in because the old dog had gotten squashed on the highway. Yeah, I know. Poor tar baby. Anyway, the new dog got in, and we joined the carnival. And somewhere around Arkansas, I called my mother to tell her that I was, you know, it's a new chapter in my book, Mom. I'm a gypsy, and she said, I thought you were up where I was supposed to be, maybe going to marry that guy with the 85 acres of organic land you bought, and I said, oh, no, and she started to cry. I thought, come on, Mom, you've always been my cheerleader. My mom and I were always really close, and I just thought, oh, I can't even call home anymore. What is it? And my mother had to get in the car and drive 4 hours up to that farm to get her antiques back, to drive 4 hours to that another time, to get the cat had been kicked by the horse. She had to take the cat to the vet. The sheep were out. It's, come on, Mom. I'm not hurting anyone but me. Leave me alone. And that is such a self-centered cry. But the alcohol allowed me to believe it. I'm not hurting anyone but me. Let me hurt me. Stand back and watch. Okay? Just watch me hurt me. Don't get close and don't try to help. And don't even try to put Dad on the phone. Just leave me alone. For God's sake, I'm just with a carnival. What's the difference? You know? And I ended up in Bogalusa, Louisiana, busted for sales and possession. And the carnival left town. Nobody came back to see if I needed anything. all my new best friends. And that's the way it was, you know. And I was in that lockup, having DTs, cutting myself because they were coming to get me. They were there. They were coming, but they really were. But they left me alone because I was the crazy one. They left me alone in there. And after I was there for about a week, a little more than a week, they put. You know, they called my name, they cuffed me, they threw me in a car. We went to this building, they threw me in this building, and there sat my dad. And I'll tell you, if I have one day in my life I can remember from my past that I wish didn't happen was that day. But in my heart of hearts and deep in my soul, I am so thankful I have that day to remember, because it was alcoholism at its finest. My dad sat there. He had hired this lawyer. He had tried to bail me out. It wasn't working. I sat inches away from my dad, who I loved. I played the accordion growing up because my dad was Czech and played the accordion. Do you know how uncool it was to play the accordion? I love my daddy. We would walk down the streets of Mount Vernon, Iowa, and he would point out in the restaurants and some of the stores some of the paintings his little girl had done. And there sat my daddy next to me, and we couldn't even look at each other. We couldn't even hold one another. I couldn't even cry on his shoulder. I was tough and hard. And he set his jaw and did what he was supposed to do, which was try to get daughter number two out of this jam. And I don't remember much about that day, and I went back, and I was in there for about another month. And when I was around 20 years sober, my sponsor said that I could ask my dad about that day. Because I didn't go home in my first number of years of sobriety and open up wounds with making my amends. I was walked through my amends by people that had been down the path that were wiser and smarter than me in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, whose experience told me much of the time just to show up and shut up. And when I was 20 years sober, I got to ask my dad about that day. And, you know, how we are. Do you remember that day, Dad, when, you know, it's like, yeah, he had to buy an airplane ticket and connect and find a car and find this place on the map, rent a car and bring a checkbook and write checks. Of course my dad remembered that day. I shut up. I listened. I said, you know, I don't remember what I said. I don't really remember if we even talked. And he said, the only thing you said, because the lawyer had asked, I'm not guilty. It's not my fault. And I believed that with my whole being. Wasn't my fault. Didn't matter if it was in me, on me, not my fault. And you want a list why? I could have given him a list why. And you were on that list, Dad. You were on that list. But all I said was, I'm not guilty, and it's not my fault. And that's what I started to believe. Now, I don't know if you're a good victim drinker, but I'm a tequila drinker. I'm a vodka drinker. I love bourbon. I want to keep going. I'm sitting in the French Quarter, and you want to go start over in Mississippi? Let's go. You want to go to Florida? What's your name? Let's go. I mean, that's the kind of drinker I am. But you give me a little gin, and you give me a little country music, you got a crying jag on. And, you know, cathartic crying, you know, the kind where everything runs from everywhere. And the guy that was looking at you like he might be interested is now, like, you know, gone. And you're talking to air when you kind of come up. And that song for the good times, oh, my God, you know, you play it over and over and over again till somebody, you know, hits the pool cue on the table and says, who's playing that blankety-blank song? Get her out of here, you know? It's like, oh, no, I just got to tell you about my life, you know? And then other times, you know, I'm living in the French Quarter now, and it's alcoholic dream. Another time, you know, I'll be in the Bastille, which is my favorite place in the world, because we painted the windows black so that in case any sun might come in, we can't have any sun come in. And Billy the bartender's on, he puts my purse under the bar, I got a tab, I can pass out and come to and pass out and come to. I got 2 days off, I'm there at the Bastille for 2 days, I never leave. I go back to 10 bar in my place in the same clothes I left in 2 days prior, and you know, maybe I'll make it home to see if the dog needs some food. Maybe I'll make it home to, you know, look at the red beans we started 2 weeks ago, and you lift the lid and everything's crawling, you know. You know, dishes went in the garbage, you know, or in the shower with the hot water trying to put all that down the drain. And there's a whole bunch of shower dishwashers back there. And that's the way I lived, you know. And my parents came over from Texas to see if I was okay. And I was a convicted felon on probation, tending bar in the French Quarter. I'd gotten fired from dancing because I would fall off the piano too many times. So I tended bar. And my parents knocked at the door that morning. Actually, it was my mother. My father was behind. And I had my platinum blonde wig on. I had my makeup all done up by the drag queens. Because we had to cover that black eye. We had to cover that black eye from Mr. Skunk Man here. He had a pet skunk named Crank, and the dog didn't like the skunk, and the skunk didn't like me, and then we had a snake just to mix it up, and they knock at the door, and there I am in my outfit with the zippers and my black eye and the skunk droppings everywhere and the filth and the craziness, and I hope I don't forget the look on my mom's face that day, and that my dad couldn't come in, and he said his jaw and stood by the door. And a few years ago, I found out that my younger sister and younger brother were on that trip, and I don't even remember them being there. A whole new set of amends that this crazy guy I was living with took my sister out to a girly show. That my little brother, all he could do was keep his hands all fisted and balled up in his pocket because this man was hurting his favorite older sister. But he was too young and too small to hurt him. And I'm a blackout drinker, so I don't remember that day with them there. I don't remember probably a lot of days where alcoholism took the driver's seat and hurt a lot of people. If a day at a time for the rest of my life I get the privilege of being a sober woman and going out in the world as an example of Alcoholics Anonymous, whether you're looking or not, whether you know it or not, and find my purpose every single day, which I found on page 77, to fit myself to be of maximum service to God and the people about me, if for every day of my life I get to do that, it's a privilege. Because I don't know, as Chuck C. said, we get a chance to rub out the record. We get a chance to somehow even the score. Every day of my life, if I get to help God's kids get things done, whether I think they deserve it or not, not my job to judge it. My job is just to do it, whatever needs to be done. Because I'm a blackout drinker, maybe that's my way. I get to make amends for all the things I never will know or I never will remember. And I get to walk down the sunny side of the street with some dignity in my head held high, because there's healing in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's ways of making amends. There's ways of becoming whole. There's ways of having the innocence come back. These steps are amazing. Amazing. You hear what came into Alcoholics Anonymous. A defiant, sick, angry, empty, lonely, dark shell of a human being, broken. 1975 was the year that I came to you. 1975 started out not good. I got fired from my bartending job at the seedy, sorry little place. I got my friend Michael was shot and killed right outside my door, and I'm in a blackout. I don't know what happened. I end up in New York. I end up coming across the country with alcoholics who are trying to leave me out of the car because I'm such a downer. I end up at Barney's Beanery in West Hollywood, where I saw the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. For the very first time, this girl had a court card. Her name was Chris Running. She was drunk. The bartender took away her keys, called a taxi, and she went off to ANA with the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, drunk as a skunk, and we all gave her a toast. Good for you, Chris. Go to ANA. I ended up back in New Orleans and then on my way to Hawaii having DTs, not realizing how sick I was, how much alcohol I needed in me as we hit part of Texas that was dry. And I ended up at Barney's Beanery. I never made Hawaii. On a motorcycle going to Palm Springs where we were going to party. I am unemployable. I have spent the last, from April to August, unemployed. I think I was hired 10 minutes as a cocktail waitress, and I forgot where the drinks went, and they asked me not to come back, and that was the last job I got. They paid me for the night. I'm 170-some pounds. I had already had my gallbladder removed. I'm sick. I'm toxic. I'm bloated. But I'm drinking. And I got that backpack and that book in there, Be Here Now by Bonnie Ramdas. And I'm on a motorcycle going out to Palm Springs, and I'm thinking, look at these suckers. I'm free. I'm free. And we stop at this club, and they leave me. And I just thought they were going to party with me. And they said they need a little extra weight. It was windy going through the desert. So thanks. We'll see ya. And they went off and left me there. And I don't remember much of what happened. When I came to, I was in somebody's apartment somewhere that was empty. And I thought I was having DTs again. And when I realized these people were really hurting me, we hitchhiked. It was the 70s. I got out of any situation many different ways. And that night I'm in this situation again, and it's a violent situation, and I just stopped screaming. I thought, who cares anyway? That was it. I just thought, who cares anyway? And I just stopped screaming. And they took me outside and rolled me off the side of the road, and I had a jaw broken in three places. My nose was broken. I had been drug around in the cement. I had a concussion, and I was pretty beaten up and pretty bad. And I was face down in the sand, and I heard the car door slam, and we are survivors. And something deep down inside of me, the great fact maybe, deep down within, said, get up, I want to live. And I heard it, and I paid attention. I ended up in the hospital, and I was laying on the gurney. I had had this ambulance ride, and I was don't remember it. I came to on the gurney again, and there were the police around me, and I was a victim of violent crime, and they wanted facts, and so I was writing because I couldn't talk. And I saw my name, and in front of my name was one word, which if I could have smiled, I would have smiled, because that's what I was shooting for that day. July 27th, 1975, it said victim. That's what I was shooting for, was victim. And August 20th, 1975 was my sobriety date. I ended up living above a liquor store. Somebody felt sorry for me. After I was in the hospital, I got out after 2 weeks. And he said, you know, he'd buy me wine and stick the wine through the wires on the jaw where the tooth had been, and I'm sucking on my cheap red wine because I'm an alcoholic. And I sat there and sat there and sat there, and I was tired because I had to go back to court. I had to go back to these doctors, and I was tired. And he tapped me on the shoulder on August 20th, and he said, you know, you got to leave. You're depressing me. And I called my mother, Colette. And I couldn't talk very easily. And she said, she didn't really wait for me to say too much. She said, Sharon, why didn't you call the Salvation Army? I can't help you anymore. And if Marge would have sent $20, you'd have another speaker. And it was mentioned today about Norm Alpie, who talked about seconds and inches, seconds and inches. And that's that moment my life hung there on $20. And Mom said no. And I looked down, and there was a phone number there because the guy I was living with was dating this girl, and the phone number was there, and it was that girl, Chris, the one who was in the bar with the big book months before. We gave her a toast. She went to A&A. She was always nice to me. I don't relate Alcoholics Anonymous. I relate she was always nice to me, and so I picked up the phone to call her. I think about if that number would have been turned upside down, pushed under the phone books that were there on the table. But I called her, and she said, Sharon, I can't help you, but Suzanne can. But she recognized alcoholism, but she wasn't sober that day. And she gave me the number of somebody to call, and I called. I don't call strangers and ask for help. All I did, Suzanne picked up the phone, and I couldn't talk anyway. So it was just like she said, what are you drinking and what are you smoking? Put them down. And I thought, how does she know I have both, you know? And she got out of me where I was, and I lived above this liquor store. And, of course, she knew where that was. She was 5 years sober, but she knew where that liquor store was. And I sat on the steps, and I waited for somebody to come get me and take me somewhere. I had no idea in this. Car pulls up with these beautiful girls in it, and I just looked at them and I thought, no, not my type of women. Because I knew they didn't want me in their car. But I was so tired, they seemed so happy, and they picked me up and put me in the back of a Volkswagen I couldn't get out of. And it seemed like at every red light, somebody would turn around and share with me parts of their story, and they went on and on and on and on, and I don't know where we're going. I don't know what this is about. And I end up at this church, and I thought, oh, here we go. I'm going to have to tell them I don't do eternity. And we're walking up there, and I'm this broken human being with this broken jaw and this broken nose and these broken shoes and these ripped jeans and this bleach-stained T-shirt. this filthy hair, detoxing of alcoholism. I'm walking up thinking, okay, this minister, whoever it is at the door, is going to put me in this kitchen behind him because I just, he's not going to let me sit with the congregation because he knows what I am. And I'm thinking that's why he's running at me. He's running at me, and he's going to put me in the kitchen before people see me. And he ran at me, and he stopped, and he stuck out his hand, and he said, "Welcome." Boy, I was disarmed. I wasn't ready for welcome. And then they seemed to kind of bring me in, and I don't know how they knew I was new. It was my first time there. You know, it's that from the pores smell, that Monday morning elevator, that good smell. It's like you walked in the room that night and go, "Where's the newcomer?" "Where's the newcomer?" I love that smell. I don't get it very much anymore, but when I smell it in a room, I'm like a beeline for it. It's like Tiffany perfume to me. I love that smell. That's what was happening that night. Somebody raised my hand. Some man named Maurice gave me a book and started talking about payment terms and don't worry about it. And I remember I had a quarter in my pocket, and I reached in and gave my last quarter. And I remember he wrote it down and handed me this book. And I don't remember anything else except the man at the podium said he waited for the spaceship to land and say, "You can come home now, Bill." And it was the perfect thing for me to hear at my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I went, oh, he understands. Just for a moment, I had that identification. The ember of life that was left in me when I walked up here, instead of snuffing it out, you guys fanned it. You put a little kindling on it. And I just, for a moment there, I flared. And they seemed to take me home and wait forever. And I guess their sponsors had said, "Wait for the liquor store lights to turn off before you send her upstairs." Now, that's love. Because I was detoxing, I hadn't bathed in a while, I hadn't washed my hair in a while, and it was a Volkswagen without windows that rolled down in the back. That's love. That's love in action. I hope I never have a car too nice that somebody can't vomit in the back seat if they have to. I hope I never, ever forget what it's like to have that kind of love shown to me when I didn't even know I was being shown that kind of love. And then I went upstairs and I slept. I don't know why. They said, "Don't drink and use, and we'll pick you up tomorrow at noon. We're going to go to the Culver City Clubhouse." All right. Well, I did. I waited for them, and they picked me up, and we went. And I was so – I couldn't talk the first 3 months I was in AA because my jaw was wired shut. So it was really a blessing because I didn't say a word, but my ears, I was listening. I was listening, and people seemed to share a lot with me because they knew I couldn't talk back. You know, it was just like, ugh. And I watched the fish. They had a big fish tank. I was really out of it for a long time. And they would drop me off and say, "Okay, now we're going to pick you up tonight. Don't drink any news. We'll pick you up tonight." And then they moved me out, and they gave me a sleeping bag. And I guess they had kind of gotten together and decided I could sleep on this floor for a week and this floor for a week, but they had to get me out of the liquor store. I was being loved. I was being cared for in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, not even knowing where I really was. I remember I raised my hand because they wanted me to do that when I was here. And it was 31 days, and I raised my hand, and I went, "Oh, 31 days. I don't stay sober 2 hours. I don't want to stay sober. I never tried to quit drinking. It was forced upon me occasionally. But 31 days, and for a moment, I felt a kiss of God's cool grace, just a little breath of wind that went under my collar. Just for a moment, it was bigger than me, and I felt it. Just a second. And the way I kind of came to in AA was because of the old-timers. They would kind of adopt me, it seemed like. We went out to this coffee shop at night. You know, I couldn't eat. My mother sent me a blender so I could finally start eating. And so me and my big book and my paper bag and my book Be Here Now, we would go to different floors for a week at a time with my borrowed sleeping bag. And we were out at this coffee shop, and June Ann was talking to Pat, and they were complaining about their sponsors, and Pat was listening, and it seemed like all of a sudden Pat's eyes got really wide, and I realized what had been happening was the coffee was drooling down the side of my face where I had no feeling, making this big puddle on the table. And I thought she was going to point and laugh and just go, "Good God, go sit over there." Instead, you know, her eyes got big, and she took her napkin, and she put it on my face. And she set it on the puddle, and she looked at me, gave me a wink, and went back to her conversation. And I felt loved. There was a man in our group who, his name was Chuck, and he always would come up to me and go, "You look tired, kid. Take your pack off and stay with us for a while." And I'd think, how does he know I'm tired? How does this man know I'm tired? And one night he saw me writing in the book. I had this little book because, you know, somebody gave me $5 or a pack of cigarettes or, you know, maybe that was those clothes they gave me so I could go to court. I'm going to write it all down because I'm going to pay you guys back before I'm gone. I'm a scorekeeper. Keep it even here. I don't want to owe anybody anything. That's what I'm thinking as I'm writing down. And he comes over and he says, "What are you doing?" And I kind of talk. So he looks at my little book and he sees what I'm doing. And he says, "Sharon, someday, listen, put that away. Someday you're going to have a car, a driver's license, registration, and insurance all in the same name." "But how does he know that?" "No." "And you'll be able to give rides. Someday you're going to have a couch where that newcomer can sleep. Someday you're going to have a closet full of clothes, and now somebody's starting a new job, and you can try and just bring it to them and put it in their car before the meeting. Put $20 in that newcomer's purse that you know they need it when they go to the bathroom." That's the way we want to be paid back. Pass it on. Well, he made me stand up a little straighter that night. He gave me back some dignity that night. That's the way I was treated here. I just showed up at a lot of meetings. I didn't drink and use in between. And things started to change pretty much when I got a sponsor who was very loud, too, louder than my head. And I had Janet for 5 years. God love her. She was something else. She had nails that were long and painted bright, and she wore tube tops and hot pants and spring-a-later shoes, so when she walked across the room, everybody saw her. And, you know, I went, "Oh, my God, I picked her as a sponsor," you know, and she's looking at this mope with a wired jaw over here going, "Oh, my God, that's my baby," you know. But we helped each other. We helped each other. And Janet had this laugh like a duck. Quack, 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 quack. I'd hear her laughing, and I'd just go, "Oh, my God, that's my sponsor." But I feel safe when I heard her in the room. First time I laughed in AA, they were talking about this dead dog, and I had this dead dog story, and I'm rolling on the floor. I'm realizing all of a sudden I'm laughing. You know, it's kind of coming from the toes, and something broke loose, and I couldn't help myself. And then I realized that everybody in the meeting, they were looking to see who was falling on the floor with laughter because nobody else was laughing. But that was okay. That was okay. And Janet was good for me. I remember the one night she said to me, I was talking to newcomers and trying to share, and I'm on fire. I'm about, 8 months sober, and I'm with Boy Meets Girl on AA campus outside the meeting, and kind of joined at the hip, had been for a while. We did panels together, convention committees together, meetings together, coffee shop together. So we're kind of there pontificating with the new people. You know, we're 8, 9 months sober with new people. And she walks by me and puts her hand on her hot pants hips, and she says to me, she said, "You better get your own God or you're going to get drunk." Where did this come from? In the middle of all this embarrassing me in front of these newcomers, and just move on. You know, that's what I'm thinking, but I don't say that. I just said, "Okay, Beacon's moving van. See it over there across the street? How's that? That's my higher power." I thought I'd make her mad. I said, "You know, Beacon's trucks, they move people, and I went all over the country, and yeah, maybe I'm like an old bureau with a knob off or a big scratch or the drawer a little crooked, or, but you know, God wraps you in those moving Beacons blankets, and you know, you get to your destination," which was Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I'm trying to explain this to her. The newcomers are all with me, and they're getting it. And she's just standing there with her hand on her hip. She says, "Good, as long as it's not you." And she clip-clopped away. And I thought, I'll pray to Beacons the rest of my life. And, you know, I did that for Bruce H. because he used to talk to me about my Beacons trucks and call me when I would see, he'd see a Beacons truck and see how I was doing. And One night I was out of gas and I had to go do a commitment, and I'm out of gas. It's the gas crunch when we were out of gas everywhere, and I'm on empty, and I'm driving around, and there I'm on the 2 freeway. I don't know where I am. I didn't know there was a 2 freeway, and I'm getting off to find a gas station, and it's dark, and my lights shine on this yard with Beacon's trucks where they all go to sleep at night, you know, and I said, okay, it's going to be all right. So that's how it started for me, and that sponsor had me do a third step with her and work on a fourth step, and I couldn't do that fourth step. I was paralyzed, and I ended up at the airport. I was going to go to Vegas and have my slip. I was 11 months sober, and I thought, I better hurry up and have it. I'm going to be a year sober. I better have the slip. And I called her up, and I said, I'm going to go have my slip because everybody seems to learn so much from their slip. And she said, yeah. You know, I don't hear the people not coming back from their slip. I only hear the people that get to come back. And she said, fine. Be like my friend Stella. She wouldn't finish her inventory either. And I thought, well, that was low. And Stella wouldn't finish her inventory either. She went out at 11 months of sobriety to have her slip, and she burned up in a bed, so go have fun. Oh, burned up in a bed. I don't think I want to go out burned up in a bed. And so my head's going, and she made me mad. And I sat at the airport, and I wrote, and I wrote, and I wrote. And before they changed the security, I wrote every inventory at the airport. There was something about it. If you find, you know, they say if you find God, go back where you found him. You know, if you find a good place to write an inventory, go back to that place to write an inventory. It just seemed to kick things loose in me. And so I got on a plane, and I went home to make my amends to my family at a year of sobriety. And Mom was easy, and Mom was good, and it was fine, and we had a great time. And here it is. I'm going back to L.A. We're putting the bags in the car, and I haven't spoken to my father. But I have the sponsor louder than my head. I didn't want to give her any excuse when I landed. I didn't want to hear it from her. And I went, okay, we're putting the bags in. It's me and Dad out here at the car. And I said, I had to talk to you. Dad, I need to talk to you. And, you know, this is Sharon's an AA. That's what happened for a long time. Nobody, Sharon's an AA. You know, it was just, they didn't get it for a while. But I told my dad, and we stood by the car on an Indian summer day. It was September. It was warm, and the car was warm, and we had our back on the car, and we looked at our toes, because I remember making holes in the sand with my toe as I talked to my dad. You know, we had gone over what I was supposed to say, and I said what I was supposed to say, and I kept it simple, and I let him talk. And he just said, I always wanted you to be happy, Sharon, that's all. I just wanted you to be happy. And that was it. That was a start. Got in the car, came back to L.A., you know, and the earth didn't shake, the angels didn't sing, it was a start. And she said, okay, you're going to go home every year, go see your parents. You're going to call them every week. You're going to be a good daughter from California. You're going to remember their birthdays, and you remember anniversary, and you're going to remember Christmas, and you're going to participate. And that's what my sponsor had me do. The actions of Alcoholics Anonymous, the living amends with my family. There's no way I could go back and take that day away, sitting in that lawyer's office in Bogalusa, Louisiana, with the $2,500 check my dad had just written to the lawyer so he would try to keep me in jail for another month, which is what he did, took my dad's money. Living amends. So I did that. And at 2.5 years of sobriety, my dad came out and walked me down the aisle, and I married another member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And at the end of that day, somebody happened to snap a picture, which I found about 2 years ago, a couple years ago. It wasn't the regular wedding photographs. It was just a picture somebody took and handed me the roll. And there was a picture of me, my chin in my hands, my wedding garb on, my father right there looking at me eye to eye. And remember, it was the end of the day. I remember sitting there listening to my dad at the end of my wedding day. My dad said, look at your life, Sharon. He had been to an AA meeting. He had met all of you. You'd all come to the wedding. You'd all showed up. We had a great time. He said, Sharon, if you think about doing what you were doing before, think twice. Look around you. You've got it made. And I remember saying, you're right, Dad. Simple. Simple. I didn't want to pontificate on it. My sponsor said, keep it simple with my dad. And I got to go home many, many years with my dad. I got to go home and listen to him as he got older, telling me how he lost his place in the community when he's, you know, retirement, and it was hard for him. And I got to just shut up and listen, because that's what my God said louder than my head. Just shut up and listen. Don't tell your dad about the emotional 12 steps he can work. Just shut up and listen. And I got to do that. And I had a sponsor, Jenny, for 5 years to 10 years. Jenny was wonderful, and I picked up the phone. My husband was being mean to me, I guess, and I picked up the phone and called her, and she said, "Well, it's time to make financial amends to your dad." Well, it's like, okay, we're talking about my husband, but they go to sponsor school. They wait for you to be willing. Having a little hard time here. Let's throw this in now. Good timing. And so I picked up the phone and called my dad and asked him if I could pay him back the money I owed him. And I thought, well, he'll have to think about it and work it out. But he was ready for me. He had a figure. He had read the big book. He had run a calculator tape. He had circled it in red and told my mother, if she gets to page 79 or whatever it is here, here's the calculator tape. It's circled in red. That's it, bottom line. So I had a new resentment. But I was making enough money that my dad accepted my terms, and my sponsor said, "Now, you will not be late with that check, because it may be the only time your father sees an active example of Alcoholics Anonymous. You be a good one." And I straighten up when somebody thinks I can pass it on or be an example or be a strong link in the chain or have something to give. I straighten up. There's something so respectful of what you have given me here that if I represent you at all, I hope to God I'm shined up and useful. So my dad accepted my terms, and she said, "Do not be late with that check, but are you willing to grow through this?" You know how they are. They want one more thing for you. Thank God. I had a sponsor that wanted more for me than I wanted for myself, because she had been down the path, and she knew there was more gifts to have than I thought I could have. And those sponsors take the time to walk back and share their experience with us, to tell us what it's going to be like if we walk down the broad highway with them, the gifts we can have. Because they're waiting for us. It's never ending here. She said, "I want you to put a note with that check. Do not send the cold hard cash. Tell him about your life." So I sent little tiny notes, because I didn't really want to tell him about the panel or the girl I was sponsoring who had to go to jail, or, you know, just kept little notes for a while. And then the little notes turned into a letter. I wrote a letter to my dad. And I hadn't written my dad a letter since I was a little girl in camp. And I finished that letter, and I thought, wow, I wrote a whole letter to my dad. He got the check probably early that week, that month. And after 4 3/4 years of a check and a note, a check and a note, a check and a note, my dad picked up the phone, called me between Christmas and New Year's. He said, "Merry Christmas, Sharon. I don't want your money anymore. I don't want your checks anymore." And I quickly calculated, he let me off about 2 years light. Yeah. But because of that sponsor, because of the promises of Alcoholics Anonymous, because of the faith that I had in this action, which meant nothing really to me other than example of Alcoholics Anonymous, my father added the words that made all the difference in our life. He said, "Don't stop sending me your notes." And I got to walk into a guilt-free relationship with my dad. Guilt-free. My dad was killed on April 19th, 1999, instantly gone. On a spring day, a tractor went over at him. He was gone. Second. No, just walked out of my mother's life after almost 58 years. I got the call, and it was, I didn't get to say goodbye, and somebody I sponsor happened to be standing there and said, "Sharon, I know your story. You had a lot of hellos. Let's get you on a plane. Let's pack you and your son up. Let's go home." And I went home, and I got to play my dad an accordion number, and I got to be there for my mom. And my son got to stand up and talk about his grandfather, because I sent him home every summer. I sent him to Iowa to know his grandparents every summer, part of my living amends. And I miss him, but he's right here. He's right here. And at 10 years of sobriety, went through a very painful divorce. He picked out the newcomer in the room. It was really hard. I had this new baby, and I kind of went a little crazy. And
I came actually up to the Spring Fling to talk right around then, and I sobbed through my whole talk because he had told me 4 days earlier that he wanted a divorce and that he had picked this other person. And I brought my baby and my babysitter and a newcomer with me and packed them up in my car, and we drove to Sacramento because I had a commitment. And I remember they wanted to pee, and I said, no, you know, no. Mad. And I came up, and everybody at that conference loved me, and I cried through my whole talk, and I just want anybody to know that I'm okay, whoever was there then. But you loved me, and my sponsor smoked pot, and I had to get a new sponsor, and I ended up at Clancy's door, and I said, I don't like you, and you probably don't like me, but I need help. He said, come in and sit down. I wheeled my baby in there, and we sat down and talked, and he said, we'll try it. And we've been trying it now for 19 years, going on 20. And he's been louder than my head through many, many things, and he's made me laugh. He's made me laugh. He's kept me on the broad highway. He's out there still doing it with a lilt in his step and a spark in his eye, and I know how to do time. I don't want to sit in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and do time. It's about joy here. Even in the biggest pains I've ever had, I still have the gratitude of joy. It's always in my heart. You open me up, and I can't close it up. My logs are burning bright because I'm in the center of it with you. And if you need a log, take it. And if I'm getting a little low, throw one on mine. That's what we do for each other. We don't sit in the closet and go through our pain. We come here. And if I haven't had the experience of something that we need to talk to somebody about, if it's somebody I sponsor, we'll go find somebody who has had, because they come here. We come here when it's good, and we come here when it's bad, and we come to Alcoholics Anonymous. You are my life. You are my light upon which everything is built. Everything. And he married her, and it was hard, and I had to show up at their baby's first birthday, and he said, you will show up, my sponsor said, and you will take a gift, and you will take your son, because he wants to see his brother turn one. So I sprinkled up the paper, I bought a Toys R Us sale item, and I wrapped it in the car, because he said, I'll bring a gift, and I showed up at that door, and my son was all happy, and I was in the kitchen the whole time, in the kitchen. And I started to like her. She was nice to my son. My sponsor said, you will bite your tongue. You will not say anything mean about her. And he'd jump in the car after being with him all weekend and tell me how great Jill was and how much fun Jill is and what she'd bought him. And I'd bite a hole through my tongue, but I'd shut up. And we started doing Disney movies together with the kids. And then we went skiing. My knees will never be the same. She's a better skier, but I wasn't going to tell her. And my sponsor said that you will walk through it with dignity and grace, because it's not about you. While you're thrown into the swamp of alligators, it's not about you. Keep swimming. So you can be an example to others. So walk through this with dignity and grace, Sharon. So I had to do my inventory and work on my defects. I had to start working on me again and leave them alone. And Jill and I got to be good friends. We got to be good friends. Better friends now that they've been divorced a while. Funny thing, though, she told me when he left her for someone else that she knew she could walk through it because she had watched me. So it's none of my business. None of my business. My job is to show up and shine up and be a good example of Alcoholics Anonymous and to sit with you. When I need something, I need to ask for it. And when you need something, you can ask for it. And my life changed. My life changed. 1 year, 1 month, and 13 days, I walked through, rocketed into the fourth dimension and never looked back. Never looked back. I have this great kid that grew up pretty much with the men at the yard. Clancy's backyard. Grew up with the men, teaching him how to play ball and volleyball. And he came in a tri-state tournament. He got the blue ribbon as a volleyball player. You helped me. You helped me raise that kid. You were there. You were there during the meetings and helping me out when I had to go to work. And I got a good job and a better job. And life got better, and my son went off to Catholic schools because I sponsor a nun, and he got kicked out of this other school, so it was just, send him to Sister Sheila. All right, they'll shape him up. And, you know, he had a great time. He felt safe and secure, and he had a great time. And he doesn't seem to have alcoholism at all. He doesn't like how it makes him feel. I hit the back door. I was out at the Southern California Convention. I hit the back door, and I had that smell. And it was coming from my house, which is strange. And it was coming from my son's room, and he was under the covers. And, oh, he was having a bad hangover. He had been to a UCLA game drinking screwdrivers in the sun and with older kids, you know, trying to show off. And so I'm cranking up the stereo and frying bacon and asking him if he wants some scrambled eggs. And he's in the shower dry heaving, and he's never done it again. He has just no fortitude. it's years ago, too. And, but my life is good. I want to tell you, I went back to New Orleans. I went back for the international convention. I got to see a lot of the people that I drank with and make some amends and be an example and show up. And just what you had done with me physically was such a powerful example that the word was out, you should see what that A&A has done with Cher. She looks great. And I tried to 12-step a couple of my old cronies, and one of them passed out on my bed at the hotel with her coming out of her cocktail waitress uniform. And I kind of pulled her back in, and she had the big book, and she's passed out, and I just thought, oh, my God. But you know what? I sponsor her, and she's 21 years sober today. Yeah. And the other one, she got sober about 6 months after her Denny, and she went back to law school. And one day I get this paper in the mail, and it's a pardon from the state of Louisiana. Fun and for free. For fun and for free. The healings never stop here. The gifts never end. My job, is to never forget the broken, dying, dead human being that sat on the steps of the Duck Pond Liquor Store on August 20th, 1975. I woke up a drinker, an active alcoholic, and I went to bed a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. How does that happen? It's such a precious gift we're given here. Seconds and inches. I used to think freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose. Freedom is I get to go home, and I'm all under one roof now with the man of my dreams, Casey, who many of you know. He's got 22 years, and we've been together a long time. And 2 weeks ago, we put ourselves all under one roof, me and him and my son. And it's okay. It feels right. It's good. Everybody's got their own bathroom. That's important. But we know every morning when we say hello, and every night when we hit our knees and go to bed, that we are the lucky ones because of a program called Alcoholics Anonymous and the gift of sobriety. The gift has been given. That's the freedom, is knowing that the gift has been given freely to me. The gift has been given, and I'm so grateful that I stayed long enough to be useful, to find a purpose for my life, and to be able to give back and to hook up with my people. I got to go back to the White House in sobriety, as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got to shine for you. And I just want you to know that I was an example of us, wearing my pretty turquoise suit with my son, who had a blazer and a tie on. And we were examples of what Alcoholics Anonymous can do, how it can put broken people back together and make them useful. So if you're new, I want to tell you, please take your pack off. Please take your backpack off and stay with us. I'm sure you're tired. And if you need a little spark, grab one of my logs, because I am not bored here. I am having a great time. And Foster City, thank you. I love you.